You are listening to Tranquility by Blue Star, and I'm playing that music because I think it's a little hypnotic. And our guests today are going to talk to us about self-hypnosis and diet. It sounds too good to be true, but I'm very hopeful. I need this. This is Sherry Edwards on BBS Radio, and I'm delighted that you could join us for a bit of conversation and information that helps support self-health. Our guests today, Dr. Stephen Gerkovich and Joy Gerkovich, have written a book, The Self-Hypnosis Diet, Using the Power of the Mind to Reach Your Perfect Weight. We're going to talk to them in just a few minutes. We've got a couple of announcements here, as usual. One, good news. Remember that we talked to you about using vocal analysis to follow a young mother through an induced labor at the local hospital, and how we were able to show the hospital that this wasn't working. And so this ended up in an emergency C-section. And we've written that up, and that paper has been accepted by the Acoustic Society of America. We've also completed another paper about using frequencies to help the body eliminate chlamydia pneumoniae and Epstein-Barr. We will post those both for you this week on NutraSounds, N-U-T-R-A, Sounds, that's plural, .com. Or if you'd like us to send you a copy, we'll do that. It's free of charge, 740-698-9119. And one more announcement. Thank you, listener, that called us to say that our archives are not up yet. We're going to be taking care of that. We are a little behind. I apologize, but we're working on it. Okay, back to our guests. You're both on the line, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Welcome to the show. And this wonderful new book, it just sounds absolutely too good to be true. Start loving food that's good for you. Boost your metabolism. Eliminate cravings at the source. Why did you write this book, and is it really true?
Well, you know, our nation's having an epidemic of overweight. And
absolutely, I see that everywhere. But, you know, in Europe, people aren't this overweight. What's the difference?
Well, there's a pretty big difference. Lifestyle is definitely the major difference there. When you go to European countries, you see people in restaurants eating foods that are quantities that are much, much smaller than the quantities that we eat here in America. And also you see people walking and riding their bikes and being much more physically active. So I think those two things are definitely kicking in favor for the Europeans.
Well, the quality of food there in Europe seems to be better. It tastes better.
Well, you know, I don't think they've had nearly the influence of fast food that we have had here in America, although I know it's definitely imposing on them now, but the food is usually, you know, prepared more from more homemade type of food.
Well, you guys have been dealing with food and health for a very long time. Dr. Gerkovich is a health psychologist specializing in mind-body medicine. You both are on the Andrew Wild's program for health and nutrition. Joy, you're a behavioral nutritionist. The program that Dr. Wild has, Integrative Medicine in the University of Arizona, did you write this out of your work with that program, or is this something that you're doing on your own?
Well, it's something we're doing on our own, but it's all a part of our own lifestyle and career path. I've been doing mind-body medicine, or what's now called mind-body medicine, for 35 years, and Joy has been involved with nutritional education since probably 30 or 35 years at least. And what we decided to do is collaborate and add the ingredient of the power of mind to behavioral nutrition and adjusting lifestyle so that the individuals can reach their perfect weight.
Well, can people do this through the book? It has a CD with it, and I've listened to parts of that. And it seems to me that this is self-contained, or do they have to come to your center?
Oh, no, everything is self-contained in the book. The book provides the reader with everything they need to know about this magnificent mind-body connection and the mind tools or how to do self-hypnosis to access that mind of the body, the subconscious mind. And then there's a wealth of information about creating a love affair with food or nourishing our love affair with food, because even though the title is the self-hypnosis diet, it's not about dieting. In fact, dieting is done with, and from this point forward, we discourage dieting and we discourage restrictive eating, but we are encouraging making and taking the steps and the changes in lifestyle so that there's better hunger management, we remove the obstacles and blocks or the psychological barriers to weight loss, as well as the psychological triggers for maladaptive eating, and creating a lifestyle where one can seemingly eat whatever they want and still keep their perfect weight.
Well, one of the things Joy said a bit ago was that our food supply is just not what it ought to be, and we eat too much. Is that something that hypnosis can really take away?
Not take away, but modify. I think that when we offer to our subconscious mind that we will have a much better awareness of when we're full or when we've eaten enough, that we can enjoy a wonderful feeling of satiation or satisfaction, fullness, and not have to finish what's left on our plate. And most of us grew up in the clean plate club, where you had to finish everything on your plate. And what that means is that most of us grew up where that signal of hunger and appetite gets very confused. In other words, our bodies might be full and we don't need to eat anymore, but there's this pattern that's been established of you have to eat everything that's on your plate, and portion sizes in America are very different than portion sizes in other countries, not to mention, you know, the degree of fats and oils and sweeteners that are in processed or fast food here in this country in particular.
I know I use food as a reward. I get a project done and then I get to eat, but I think that's from my upbringing of being on a farm. You didn't eat until you got things done.
Right.
Is that the kind of thing that you address along with this Clean Plate Club?
Yes, in part. Basically, what we want to do is we want to clear the path. In fact, that's one of the hypnosis sessions on the CD, clearing the path. In other words, removing the obstacles, removing the sort of the unconscious or subconscious behaviors that developed over life that are causing us to keep weight or gain weight, and doing this via access of the mind or the subconscious mind. And, you know, most people have the misconceptions about hypnosis from what they've seen on TV or nightclub acts, and stage hypnotists have done a great job of tarnishing and misleading people about what hypnosis is really about. For all hypnosis is really self-hypnosis, and it's not done to anyone. No one gets hypnotized in that sense, but each of us, short of those individuals that might have a retardation problem, each of us have the capacity to become absorbed in our thoughts and ideas, almost identical to a daydream, if not identical to a daydream. And a hypnotic trance is a very deliberate daydream where we learn to produce that for ourselves so that we're wonderfully absorbed in our own thoughts, ideas, and images, and then we utilize that to put in the messages that we want our body to respond to regarding metabolism, feelings of fullness, the kind of things that we would crave and enjoy, so that we can make a shift from what our palate may be used to in terms of fast foods or highly processed or fattening foods, to being able to really have a compelling desire for the wholesome foods that actually satisfy hunger and create a better hunger management, while at the same time giving us energy, vitality, and a love affair for the foods we're eating.
Well, you've touched on it a bit about hypnosis and kind of what it really is. I wanted to ask that question because you said it's self-thought. So is this a thing that you go through right before you eat? Is it something that you do daily to prepare yourself? Is this very hard to do? Can you give us a little rundown of how this works?
Sure. No, it's actually very easy to do. I think the hardest part of learning to do self-hypnosis is getting in your own way by trying. In creating a daydream, if you think about what a daydream is like, often you can have your eyes open and you're staring out a window. You're effectively seeing, but you're not necessarily looking. You're staring. And that's because your attention or consciousness is more absorbed on your own thoughts than on the visual stimuli. Likewise, we can stare with our auditory sense. We can be in a lecture hall and know that somebody's lecturing, but we don't know what they're talking about. And that staring with the auditory sense is another aspect of we're more absorbed in our own thoughts and ideas. And that daydream-like state we can also do with the gustatory sense of taste. In fact, we do it all the time. How many times do you notice that half the meal is already eaten and you haven't been tasting it because you've either been busy in conversation or absorbed in other thoughts or reading a book or watching TV? We can stare with our sense of smell and our tactile kinesthetic sense. And with hypnosis, we're able to access that mind of our body, the subconscious or automatic mind, the part of us that blinks and digests our food and regulates our pulse and, you know, breathes for us. And that automatic or mind-body is directly accessible through self-hypnosis. And again, all hypnosis is really self-hypnosis because it's not done to somebody, but we can teach it or guide somebody to experience it in much the same way we would with teaching or guiding someone to learn how to meditate.
On this wonderful disc that comes with the book, Joy is talking about find a comfortable position and relax. Is that steps that you take people through and then just walk them through this to prepare themselves for what they really want?
Exactly. In learning self-hypnosis, we don't learn it by studying it or reading about it, any more so than we learn about table salt or sodium chloride by reading about it. We could read about it and know a lot about it, but once you put salt on your tongue, you know it forever. And the same is true for doing self-hypnosis. We facilitate the experience of what does this deliberate daydream feel like when you very deliberately choose to become absorbed in your own thoughts and ideas or to create a visualization of something you want. So the CD has many different types of hypnosis sessions that take the work out of it and guide somebody through it so that, as well as having all the messages embedded in there so that if they want to, they can just simply use the CD. And we do recommend that they use it for about at least a month with regularity, meaning every day. And they can also use it at bedtime to drift to sleep to it as well. Because it takes about 21 days for our body to create new habits, a new normal in essence. So if we change the way we hold a tennis racket or a golf club, at first it might feel awkward because change in itself is stressful. But if we do it with regularity for about 21 days, we create a new normal. And that's what we're doing with lifestyle, eating patterns, food choices, exercise and physical activity. We're using the hypnosis. We're making subtle shifts and changes in a way that takes the stress out of it and makes it enjoyable. And the end result is we create a new normal, a new set of habits that we can live with that don't involve dieting at all now.
So this is not hard to do at all.
Oh, no, it's easy. You know, like with little children, which kids are some of the best hypnotic subjects because they're so good at pretending. And with kids, I don't talk about hypnosis or trance. You know, in the clinic, I'll just simply say, pretend that you are turning the switch off to your right hand. And you might see them sort of wiggling around, and once they tell me, okay, I turned it off, we can go ahead and start an IV in their hand or draw blood from them, and they don't flinch because they have effectively turned it off with their imagination. And it really is that simple.
And so somebody plays this, like once a day, twice a day?
Once a day is probably sufficient, and we also recommend that if they want to, they can also condition themselves to use it at bedtime to fall asleep to it.
And that just, like, absolutely too easy to be true.
Do people give you
a hard time over that?
Think of it. Actually, most people that discover self-hypnosis are pretty amazed that everything they find that everything they need is already within themselves to do this, and it really is that easy. Again, the hardest part is when people get in their way by trying too hard or making an effort or struggling with it. Hypnosis is really a matter of you make it happen by letting it happen, and there's no trying at all. It truly is like Yoda said in Star Wars, there is no try. There's do and there's do not. And individuals that are highly analytical or very skeptical or who don't, you know, who have very strong preconceived notions that I can't do this, you know, they're going to fulfill Henry Ford's wonderful statement that if you believe you can or if you believe you can't, you're right. It comes down to using one's motivation, what we want, and adding belief, allowing ourselves to believe it as if it's already happened. And our subconscious mind cannot tell the difference between what's real and what we imagine.
I
can give you a great example of that, if you like.
Yes, go ahead. I have dozens of questions.
You're located in Albany, New York, if I recall?
Albany, Ohio.
Oh, Albany, Ohio. Okay, well, Ohio gets pretty chilly.
Yes, it does.
And we live in Tucson, Arizona, where from June till September, it doesn't dip beneath a triple digits in the daytime. And I can sit outside under the shade of a palm tree at about 105, 106 degrees temperature with one of the patients I work with and have them imagine, what was it like back in the winter times in Ohio when you were walking to school and not only was it 0 degrees, but you had the wind chill factor, and really getting into imagining what it was like. And even though we're sitting in 100 and some degree temperature, we start to see goosebumps on their arms, or their teeth might start to chatter. The imagination is that powerful, and our subconscious mind, or the mind of the body, is that responsive, because again, it cannot tell the difference between what's real and what we imagine. So that's what we're tapping into, this powerhouse of subconscious mind-body for, in this case, weight loss. We use it in our mind-body clinic at the Integrative Medicine Program for all sorts of things, medical and psychological applications.
Well, besides this book, could people come to see you?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Joy and I have a private practice, and then she's also works as a nutritionist for Dr. Weil's program, and I'm the director of the Mind-Body Clinic at the medical school also.
Would you like to give out your phone numbers or your website, your email?
Our website's probably the best way to reach us. One is the selfhypnosisdiet.com. That's one route to it. And another route is healingwithhypnosis.com.
Okay.
And they both go to the same address.
I'm trying to write this down hurriedly here.
Yeah, healingwithhypnosis and the selfhypnosisdiet.com.
Okay.
Either
and
one.
They can send you an email through there?
Sure.
Okay. It says in the book that this can boost your metabolism. Is that a suggestion that you have in the, I don't know what you call it when you make a script for hypnosis, but is that a suggestion that you give, or is this just something that happens when you start eating good food?
Maybe a little bit of both, but I do have those suggestions embedded within the hypnosis work so that their metabolism is going to help them lose weight and also give them more energy. We know that we can stimulate more thyroid release using suggestion. And recently I just saw an article in one of just a popular magazine of a woman who used self-hypnosis to overcome Hashimoto's disease, which is a thyroid deficiency, mm-hmm. just using the power of her mind. So we can affect our metabolism and a variety of other physiological functions using suggestion. And the ones for weight loss are the ones that we've included within the CD that goes with the book.
Well, why don't we do this for everything, like tobacco and cherry pie and Godiva chocolate and bad relationships?
Well, we have about 70 different titles because
In my work, I'd say the majority of cases I see, it's medical applications, helping people not have to have the side effects from their cancer, chemotherapy, pain-related things, using it for anesthesia, skin conditions, gut problems respond beautifully. I mean, nothing works better to remove warts than self-hypnosis. And that's a human papillomavirus.
Mm-hmm. There's so many different applications. Even people use it for childbirth, reducing stress for fertility.
Dentistry, I've heard it used with.
Yes.
Wait, I'd like to go off on a tangent on the human papillomavirus and what's going on in Texas, but I need to stick to these questions. I think that people will really be interested in about your book, and we'll have you back to talk about all your other books that you've done. I want to talk about success rate. How long does it take to lose weight? How much weight should someone lose? How does that go? Can you give us a couple of examples of people you worked with?
Well, we can. First of all, though, we usually recommend people to lose no more than 2 pounds per week. That's kind of an optimum amount. Any faster than that, it's more difficult for them to keep it off. But, you know, the rate of weight loss varies with the individual. Usually someone who has quite a lot of weight to lose will lose it faster at the beginning. Someone who maybe just has 10 pounds to lose probably takes it off a little slower. But we do have one particularly interesting example, a woman who came into our office, and her name was Ariana, and she was maybe about 50 pounds overweight or so, and she had a number of other health problems. She was borderline diabetic and had high blood pressure and cholesterol problems, and she also had a lot of body pain in her back, her lower back, and her knees were bothering her. And it took her, I think about 6 months or so to take off that 50 pounds. And we were so delighted, and so was she, that actually all the other health problems that she was having also disappeared. She was no longer diabetic. She went off all of her medications for blood pressure and cholesterol. And the other wonderful thing is her body pains, her joints and her knees and her back were not bothering her anymore, so she was more able to get out there and be more physically active.
Do you have a support group that can help people with going through this system?
No, we don't, actually, because we don't need one. This is very simple stuff. It's a matter of, first, the individual has to be motivated. They have to really want to lose weight. And they have to want to do whatever it takes to lose the weight. And then the easy part kicks in. Once somebody is that motivated and they make a choice, then they're going to be successful. And their belief is going to be reinforced by the hypnosis, and the mind of their body, their subconscious, is going to respond. When somebody is on the fence, or if they're trying, like you hear people say, I'm trying to quit smoking, that means that they're not quitting smoking, they are smoking. When somebody says, I'm trying to lose weight, they are not losing weight. They are struggling with it, and they're not being successful. But when somebody makes the decision to start talking to themselves and to that mind of their body with a positive language, I am losing weight. I am controlling my portion sizes. I'm loving what I'm eating now. And also learning the language of the subconscious mind, meaning removing words that don't register subconsciously. Our subconscious mind, again, that's why children are such good hypnotic subjects. They are already thinking in the language of the subconscious mind, which is almost totally literal. In the literal sense, the word try means put on trial or see whether or not. And the word not has no meaning at all. So when they hear, I do not want a cookie, all the subconscious hears is cookie, because not cannot be literalized. You can't make it's not a concrete thing. It's an abstraction or a concept. And we have two parts to our mind. The conscious thinking mind is a part of us that can add, subtract, tell time. But the subconscious mind is that part of us that's right below our thinking awareness. It's the part that breathes us and regulates our immune responses and manages our metabolism and our appetite and so many other things. And that's the part of the mind that we're addressing. And it has a language of its own. Here's a good example. We've all heard people say this phrase, "Oh, I want to lose weight so badly." And we know exactly what they want. But their subconscious mind hears, much like a little waiter or waitress inside them taking their order, "What would you like? Lose weight? Okay. How would you like that done? Badly? That's how you're going to get it. Badly. Not effectively or not easily." So those adverbs and the way we speak to ourselves subconsciously, and our subconscious mind is always hearing everything we think and say and hear and everything we picture in our mind. So, again, most people are caught up in this struggle of, "I'm trying to lose weight," or "I don't like something," or "not this" or "not that." And by learning self-hypnosis, they are automatically tapping into discovering how to speak to the subconscious mind so that it responds. Because, again, it can't tell the difference between what's real and what we imagine.
So
it just responds.
So the scripting is really, really important in dealing with this. And that's probably why you've done the tape for the, or the CDs for them.
Yes.
So they have to be motivated to buy your book and motivated to play the CD. Is the further motivation on the CD for them?
Yes, in part because it's very euphoric, in the sense of it is very comforting to not only relax, because we weave a lot of relaxation into this, but also it's greatly ego-strengthening, meaning it's very boosting to one's sense of well-being and confidence. And when we feel positive and we feel confident about things, that's very encouraging and motivating to us, as opposed to when we're discouraged or feeling defeated. And diets have sort of built in this defeating kind of factor, because if we cheat or we vary from the diet or we don't stay on the diet strictly, then we start feeling badly that we're not doing well. Whereas with the self-hypnosis, we want to keep enhancing our positive feelings of success, because that is wonderfully motivating. It's a treat or a reward in and of itself, and very quickly the effort becomes the reward.
Well, Joy was talking about this is all very natural, and you go through wanting the good foods. And reading some of the statistics about stomach stapling, and we get a lot of people here at this clinic that need nutritional support because the stomach stapling just ruins their ability to absorb. So two or three questions here. Is this good for somebody who's had stomach stapling so they can use your book and help themselves? And what do you think of stomach stapling as an alternative?
Well, I've actually seen quite a few patients that have had bariatric surgery, stapling, bypassing, and other techniques, and I think that for some individuals who have struggled with morbid obesity for a long time and they have health problems, we now see much greater success with bariatric surgery than we've ever seen in the past. And I remember once doing a little mini residency at Johns Hopkins Obesity Clinic almost 30 years ago, and at that time there was a great deal of risk to stapling and bypassing, but now we're seeing a lot of success, and I think that after individuals who've gone through those procedures, they do benefit from having the motivation to stay with the program and not sabotage or defeat it, because statistics have shown that about one-third of the cases will actually sabotage themselves by what they eat and how much they eat, despite the fact that they've already had the bariatric surgery.
Joy, is this where you would come in as a nutritionist and help those people choose the right foods?
Yes. Yes.
Well, what I was leading up to is, how could somebody fail using your technique? I mean, it doesn't seem like, it just sounds so easy. Just put the tape or the CD on and go. Why, does anybody fail on your system?
Yes, I would say yes, they can, and that, again, goes back to motivation. It's, individuals will come in and say, "Well, I want to quit smoking," but they'll say that, but they don't want to stop lighting them and puffing on them. There's a part of them that really doesn't want to quit, and in one piece of research I did in 1980, I found that one third of the women that were being treated for obesity with hypnosis, one third of them actually were found with the weight and the was functional to them. It was a form of protection because they had been molested or assaulted in the past, and by having the weight, they didn't have the anxiety. Now, it wasn't conscious. I mean, this was all at a subconscious level, but we were able to uncover that using hypnosis, and that's another part of this self-hypnosis diet, the CD as well. There's one hypnosis session that deals with uncovering the barriers and the obstacles to one actually having what they want consciously.
So there really isn't a downside to doing it this way at all.
No side effects, no drugs required. Once somebody actually discovers what they can do with their mind, there's an immediate halo effect onto so many other activities and behaviors in their life.
Is there a part of the CD that can help them through emotional issues that aren't real general, like you were talking about the molestation? Is that kind of thing addressed on the CD?
Not specifically. What we do have, since we don't know each person that's going to be listening to this, we do have a very gentle way of offering hypnotic suggestions that if there is something that's operating at a subconscious level that's interfering or prohibiting their weight loss, that it will be able to come to mind in a comfortable way so that they can have an awareness of it and then start making choices about it. So if somebody actually has had some traumatic experience in the past, it's not going to be unbound uncomfortably. They're going to start to get information or those, aha, that's right. You know, oftentimes little children hear things like, well, you can't have that now, but you can have it when you're bigger, like your older brother, older sister. And, you know, to a little child, you know, when you're bigger means when you're bigger. It doesn't mean when you're older, which is what the parent meant. So sometimes people are fulfilling prophecies or suggestions that were offered to them that they interpreted in that literal sense, even without being aware of it. So we want to help them uncover those kind of triggers and barriers and, moreover, the patterns that's unconsciously developed through their life experience.
Julie, we talked a little bit about our food supply. When people are going through this, do you suggest that they add supplements if they're craving a particular thing?
No, the whole program actually, with the suggestions that are in the hypnotic trance work, really help to create those thoughts into their own actions so that they really do start. We have people who email us saying they're actually starting to crave salads, and the unhealthy cravings are disappearing. So it's not really a question of anybody having to, consciously be aware of what they need to stop eating. It's definitely done on the subconscious level.
And in regard to supplements, if somebody wants to use different supplementations or they want to use a variety of diets, you know, that's fine. You know, we'll help them, or the book will show them how to actually use that power of the mind to make that successful for them or even more successful for them.
So there's a built-in thing of getting rid of, like, cravings. I'll bring up one example from our own archives here. People who crave cigarettes, sometimes they lack a sulfur enzyme, that there's sulfur in the cigarettes that they get. And if we provide them the sulfur enzyme, they don't have this need to smoke anymore. So sometimes people will crave milk or steak, or I crave tomato juice when I need vitamin D. So those kinds of cravings, if those happen with people, does your CD help them through that? Or they just choose that because they know that's what they need?
Well, I think, ours won't necessarily provide the supplementation, like sulfur, but it will give them the emotional strength and the psychological fortitude to stay on course with the success that they want to achieve, and also to benefit from everything else that they are using. You know, what most people look at the smoking thing as, you know, the nicotine patches and such, and, you know, it's encouraging to hear you speak of the sulfur enzyme because, you know, nicotine withdrawal is only 72 hours. I mean, 72 hours after somebody quits smoking, there is no more nicotine in their body. You know, this whole business of using patches and nicotine gum only prolongs the physical dependency or addiction to the nicotine. So by using one's mind, we can stay really focused on what we want, have the fortitude to do it, and have the strength to make everything we're using work better for us.
I've heard two sides to craving. Like, you crave what your body needs, but you really shouldn't have it, like some people who are allergic to milk. And then others that, okay, you're going to crave what you need, like somebody would crave apricots and there would be sulfur in there. What side do you stand on here about cravings?
I'm on both sides. I think that sometimes our body craves what it needs, and there's other times where the craving is more of a psychological kind of craving because of past experience and past patterns. So I think it has to be evaluated on an individual basis to see what does that person really need, if anything.
And I think, too, that I know one particular example of a woman who was craving parsley and could hardly drive by a grocery store without going in and buying fresh parsley. And she actually found out a few weeks later that she was iron deficient. And there's a lot of iron in parsley. So that is an interesting aspect of it. Mm-hmm. The other thing I wanted to mention, too, Sherry, is that food cravings can also be born from the fact that many people, especially in America, eat a lot of foods that don't provide the nourishment that our bodies truly need for optimum health. And so if we're eating a diet that's pretty high in that type of, I call it non-food, then the body does set up a lot of cravings and sets the stage for wanting more and more. For example, if a person gets up and has for breakfast a donut, which doesn't really have, you know, if it's not a homemade whole wheat donut, it doesn't really have any nutrition in it. And so at 9 o'clock, they're hungry. The body's saying it's really hungry. Even though we've had, you know, a 400-calorie diet of donut or more, our body's telling us we're hungry. So we go out and we have, maybe a McDonald's hamburgers or French fries or something. And that sets the stage for eating a lot of calories and not getting the nutrition.
Well, that's part of the craving thing.
Yes.
This is my opinion. They don't regulate the flour that goes into donuts like they would regulating it that goes into bread. They take out 18 vitamins, they put in 12 back, and they have the audacity to call most flours enriched. And they really sell you the rest of them on the shelf. I just think that is so degrading to our nutrition and our whole population and how it deals with our metabolism. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's my soapbox.
It's a good one.
It's our soapbox, too, because you're absolutely right. You know, if people are eating nutrient-poor foods, their body's going to keep asking for more and more, despite the calories that are coming along with it. And you're absolutely right.
That's why I brought up this idea of cravings. We're getting a lot of people in the clinic now that have allergies to wheat, and it has, like, doubled in the past year. And as we look at these people, they're not able to process thiamin. And when we had the wheat evaluated for what was in it and testing it, we're finding out the thiamin has been taken out. And thiamin is one of the major nutrients that keep you from having these immune reactions. So this modified wheat, I think, is really causing a lot of overweight and a lot of immune degradation, you know, all this rhinitis and flu and stuff.
That's really a great example of the fact that the more processed foods we eat, the worse it is for us. You know, we always, in fact, the kind of the take-home nutritional guideline that I always like people to have is that they should eat as close to nature as possible. So enriched flours are highly processed.
Well, how hard is raw? I mean, people say when we talk to them about their kids and maybe ADD diets and that kind of thing, it's, oh, that's too hard. I just don't have time to do that. But how hard is raw? It's just, it's not.
Raw? You mean R-A-W?
Raw vegetables, raw fruits.
Oh. Well, you know, I think that's actually very individual. I think some people thrive on a lot of raw foods, and I think other people thrive on foods that are steamed or lightly cooked. I think it's very, very individualized. I myself personally like a cooked salad, meaning I like to have stir fries that are just, you know, lightly steamed or lightly sautéed. And mm-hmm. But other people thrive on a lot of raw mm-hmm. foods.
Yeah, but I think you're right, Sherry. It's easy, and it's not hard at all to have fresh foods. And when people say, well, I don't have the time for this, you know, they have the unfortunately, they have the time to let their kids be drugged with Ritalin and Xylert and all these chemistries that we're now seeing horrible side effects from. But they don't want to take the time for a nutritious diet for these kids. And then when we look at what they're serving in the school cafeterias or what used to be cafeterias, it's appalling.
I can see we're going to have you guys back many times. I've got a couple more questions I want to get in here. Who shouldn't use the self-hypnosis diet?
Anybody who's already their perfect weight and eats really well.
So somebody who has cancer or AIDS or something like that, there's no restriction.
Oh, you know,
no,
excellent nutrition and lifestyle is going to promote health. So somebody who really has compromised health would benefit from it.
Mm. And I think if somebody wants an easy answer, but they want it easy in the form of, just give me a pill, don't even suggest that I change what I'm doing or what I'm eating, it's not going to be for them, because this book is a book about transforming one's life, transforming one's eating style and their activity levels into the healthy lifestyle that's going to maintain their perfect weight.
Well, it sounds very self-responsible, and I just think that is an issue for a lot of people. They just want to pop a pill or have a surgery and not have to think about it. And to ingrain that idea of self-health is hard, because we have been taught to trust our doctors, to trust...
Yeah. And, you know, you think back, you know, there was a word that's, I think it's even left the dictionary now. It's called salubrity. And it was one of the features of being a good citizen in ancient Greece. You were salubrious. And salubrity is that quality of our responsibility to be healthy so that we're not a burden on our society or our community. And over time, what's happened is people don't feel responsible for their health and their well-being. Instead, you know, if I get sick, I'll go to the doctor. Or somebody will fix me. But, you know, being salubrious or having a sense of salubrity, I think that in many dictionaries you won't even find it anymore. I believe it left the dictionaries about 60 years ago.
Spell it for me.
S-A-L-U-B-R-I-T-Y.
Okay. One of the things we try to do here at BBS Radio is give people ideas and options for self-health, and I certainly think this is a big one. I admit that I have not read all of the book. Are there diet suggestions in here as well, and like recipes? Or?
Well, there's a whole chapter, Chapter 9, which is devoted to wholesome food choices. You know, we didn't want this book to be about food, because people are really tired of hearing about dieting and what foods they're supposed to eat. So we pretty much put it all into one chapter so that people would get a dose of what we feel is healthy lifestyle choice for food. And so there are not recipes, but there are some great ideas for very easy to fix healthful foods.
The majority of this book, if not the central theme, is really tapping into the power of one's mind
and using that to make diets work if they choose to diet, but also to make these lifestyle changes effective, easy, stressless, and most importantly, enjoyable. Again, the best chapter in the book for me was, and the most fun writing was the one called Nourishing Your Love Affair with Food, because Joy and I love to eat. And I remember one evening Dr. Weil was over for dinner and the three of us were really eating a wonderful meal, wonderful desserts. And it dawned on me, this is why we keep our perfect weight. It's what we eat and how much we eat of it. And we don't have to think about dieting. I can eat anything I want and I don't have to worry about gaining weight because we've made so many healthy changes in how we do it, and those healthy changes are now the normal or for us or the current habits we have. And by helping people make that subtle shift, they don't have to do it all, just little tiny baby steps, and before they know it, they discover, I'm loving this. I'm getting a reward from every little change I introduce.
The name of the book is The Self-Hypnosis Diet. Where can they get this?
Any major bookstore, publisher SoundsTrue.com, our website, TheSelfHypnosisDiet.com, but it's also like the Barnes & Noble type places.
And it's relatively inexpensive, $21.95. It's been great having you on, Stephen Gurkovich and Joy Gurkovich, G-U-R-G-E-V-I-C-H, if you're going to go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble to find this book. We will have you back. I want to talk about vaccinations and food supplies and a lot of other things that we brought up. So if you're willing, I think you have a lot to offer for self-health and the people who listen to BBS Radio. Thank you for being part of the show.
Thank you for having us. It went too quick.
Yes,
thank you for having us. It's been a great pleasure for us to be available.
Yes, it was. Thank you. We will certainly have you back. Until next week.